Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Eitan Kasteljanich, and I am representing Travis Coleman.
Good morning
to all of you. Coleman has degenerative disc disease of the lumbar and cervical spine, and he also has a pain disorder, depression, and insomnia. He required cervical spine surgery in May of 2015, but unfortunately, he has never recovered the ability to perform any type of full-time competitive work. The ALJ erred here by improperly rejecting numerous medical opinions, including the opinions of two treating physicians, Dr. Foster and Dr. Jackson, two treating nurse practitioners, Ms. Schwarzkopf and Ms. Cass.
You know, I would like you to, since we don't have a lot of time, I know that there is a lot of conflicting medical testimony, but the elephant in the room somewhat is, your brief argues that there's no evidence of malingering in the record, but you admit that Coleman exhibited drug-seeking behavior, and the ALJ seemed to discount your client because of that. And there is testimony from nurses that Coleman exaggerated his limitations and pain during the emergency room visits. There was also evidence of, like, he had huge amounts of pills that he'd been prescribed. Why isn't that a sufficient basis to find that there was evidence of malingering here? So it seems to me central, a lot of it is the ALJ discounted your client basically for drug-seeking behavior and malingering or whatever. So if that's the case, that's kind of a lens, if that's supported, that's a lens that kind of directs us on everything else. So can you address that?
Sure. Malingering is a very strong term, and it's because, and that's part of why the ALJ, nowhere in her decision does she even use that word. In fact, nowhere in the record is that word used anywhere by any of the physicians or anybody who treated him. And so, yes, there were, this is a large file, and there was some concerns that he appeared to show exaggerated symptoms, but all of that is balanced out or completely undermined, so to speak, or overmined by the fact that he ultimately was found to have cervical spinal stenosis that required surgery. So it's a little bit odd to say that somebody who actually was in such bad shape that he required spinal surgery was exaggerating his pain complaints. Apparently, the surgeon didn't think so. Not only did the surgeon not think so, but Dr. Foster, his treating physician, didn't think so. Dr. Jackson, I mean, all of the treatment providers. And so if we didn't have four treatment providers, examining psychologist, Dr. Schneider, and a medical expert, Dr. Linsenmeyer, who responded to interrogatories by stating that he believed Coleman meets a listing. If we didn't have all of that, then I think your concerns would be, they would be much strong, you know, that would make more sense. And once again, wasn't the ALJ's concerns, because the ALJ never stated malingering. But
the ALJ was concerned about drug-seeking behavior.
Okay, I would like to address that as well. There's an interesting conundrum here when you, if you have a condition that causes pain, if you seek medication for the pain, then you're drug-seeking. If you don't seek medication for the pain, then you're exaggerating your complaints about pain, because if your pain was so bad, why aren't you seeking medication? So in this case, it fell on the other way. His pain was so bad that he was seeking pain medication throughout the record, and he was prescribed it. And the thing is, if you are abusing the pain medication, the doctors will figure this out and they will cut you off. I'm sure you've seen other files, other cases where that is exactly what has occurred. That has not occurred here.
He was an alert in the system, and once said something like 800 pills had been prescribed over a short period of time, and then he had his emergency room visits and that type of thing, and they refused to give him pain medication because they came exactly to that conclusion, because I think there was, it was 800 and maybe was another one 600 or I don't, it was a huge amount of pills.
Yes. I think that early on he was, it, you know, that there's evidence that supports exactly what you're saying. But as when you look at the longitudinal record here, that was before they had diagnosed him with the cervical spine injury that required surgery. And that's one of the odd things here is we've got a treating neurosurgeon who found that he had retrolisthesis in his spine, cervical spine, requiring surgery. We've got several other opinions from treatment providers that agreed with that. We've got a medical expert who testified through interrogatories that he felt that was present. And then we've got the government arguing that that's not the case. And we have the ALJ also not accepting that diagnosis. The other thing that I guess is that I think relates to what you're asking about the drug seeking. Coleman has been prescribed all these medications. He's been diagnosed by several providers with a chronic pain disorder. And that is an impairment that the ALJ refused to accept. And then she rejected some of the medical opinions because they were based in part on the diagnosis of chronic pain disorder.
Did your client ever seek non-drug treatment to relieve his pain, physical therapy, etc.?
I can't respond to that immediately, so I'll try to respond to that in rebuttal. He did, obviously, having cervical spine surgery is about the highest level of treatment you're ever going to find here in such a case. If you don't have any more questions right now, I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Sure.
Is that okay? Do my colleagues want to ask anything right now? Okay, that would be fine. We'll give you 3 minutes for a rebuttal then. Thank you. All right, I believe we have, I show Sarah Moom.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Can you state your appearance for the record?
Yes, may it please the court. My name is Sarah Moom, here representing the commissioner. So Coleman alleges he became disabled in November 2013 after either a dentist or a coworker attacked him. His story has varied, which he says aggravated his spinal impairment. And though Coleman did undergo a cervical fusion, imaging has uniformly indicated only mild cervical and lumbar findings. And as you just discussed with Mr. Janich, the ALJ expressed concerns about malingering and drug seeking. And in this
did the ALJ actually make an affirmative finding of malingering so as to justify exclusion of Coleman's testimony? If not, are we free to infer malingering from other evidence in the record, or what is your interpretation of the record on that?
So the ALJ, you're correct, and opposing counsel is correct, that the ALJ never specifically said Coleman is malingering. But under Carmichael, under a footnote in Carmichael, and I'm afraid I don't have that exact site in front of me, the Ninth Circuit doesn't require that the ALJ make a specific finding of malingering. And I'm unaware of precedent requiring that there be a physician diagnosis of malingering in the record. So what is required is the ALJ point to evidence of malingering. Affirmative evidence of malingering.
If there's not a finding of malingering, then are we free to, then can we infer malingering, or what clear and convincing reasons did the ALJ give from your perspective for rejecting Coleman's testimony? Or was it rejected, or was it discounted, or how do you interpret the record?
So I would say that you can infer malingering from the three pieces of evidence that I discussed in the brief, specifically the Waddell signs with overreaction, the inconsistencies on exam, including grip strength inconsistencies, and the inconsistencies in the emergency room when Coleman said he can't open his right hand, and then the attending party noted that shortly thereafter, he began using his hand, talking animatedly with it, opening it, moving it around when he said he couldn't. So I would say that you can rely on those three pieces of evidence the ALJ cited to infer malingering and then find that the ALJ did not need to provide any additional reasons. But even if the court doesn't want to rely on malingering, that's okay because the ALJ provided additional reasoning. And first, I would say that those pieces of evidence of malingering that I already pointed to are themselves a clear and convincing reason to reject, for the ALJ to discount or reject the Coleman's subjective symptom complaints. Under Thomas, a failure to give consistent effort is a valid reason, and entertone attention, exaggeration on examination is also a reason. But then as you discussed with Mr. Yonich, the ALJ also found drug-seeking behavior, and there is substantial evidence of that in the record. Beginning as early as December 2013, when Coleman sought Vicodin for rib pain but didn't have tenderness on examination when palpated with the stethoscope, when he went into the emergency room for neck pain and was declined because of the ED alert showing a lot of scheduled drugs and became very aggressive, and then returned the very next day alleging neck pain but moving his neck freely when looking around the room, when he fired Dr. Foster with very strong language because he was denied extra pain medication. So it's not, and it's not as opposing counsel suggests, a situation in which the claimant is simply experiencing such significant pain and is seeking pain medication to address it, but it's also paired with the problem that there are the inconsistencies on examination that we've just discussed. So he's seeking pain medication, but when doing so, he is making complaints that are not consistent with the findings on examination and with his behavior. So those two things paired together are very strong evidence that Coleman's subjective complaints are not reliable. And then finally,
I have a question.
The ALJ pointed.
Let's say, this is Judge Gilman. You know, I note that the ALJ noted the inconsistencies with the medical record and discounting Coleman's treating physicians, but did the ALJ consider the other factors set forth in the 20 Code of Federal Regulation 404.1527? And those factors are such things like length of treatment relationship, frequency of examination, the consistency of the physician's opinion, specialization of the treating physician. Is there any evidence in the record that the ALJ considered any of those other factors set forth in that regulation?
If you will give me a moment, I am turning to the ALJ's decision now. I'm sorry, can you tell me which regulation you were citing again?
Yes, 404.1527. See.
Okay. So I would note on page 24, the ALJ acknowledged that he considered opinion evidence in accordance with the requirements of 20 CFR 404.1527 and with 416.927, the corollary regulation for Title 16. And I haven't yet gone through the ALJ's decision to see if he discussed each of those factors individually with regard to each individual opinion, but I would note that I'm not aware of any Ninth Circuit requirement that the ALJ expressly discuss each of those factors. Although the ALJ is required to consider them, I'm not aware of any language requiring the ALJ to discuss every single one of them.
So is it your argument then that the ALJ acknowledged those sections? Awareness?
Yes, my argument is that, I'm sorry for interrupting.
I know it's hard. You don't have internet? Is that why you can't zoom in here? Or you don't have
I'm located with the agency's VPN.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's easier if in the future, if you can get in on Zoom, it works a lot better because then we don't talk on top of each other. But since your agency has a number of cases that seems like it would make some good sense. But let's, that being said, so is your argument that the fact that the ALJ acknowledged those sections means the ALJ knows what's required and, but doesn't have to say everyone, but the ALJ incorporated that into the analysis, or what are you saying?
Yes, that is my argument. My argument is that the ALJ acknowledged the requirements of the regulation of 20 CFR 404-1527 and the corollary Title 16 regulation, acknowledged that he considered the opinion evidence in accordance with those requirements and then discussed the opinion evidence. So while the ALJ may not have discussed, each of the individual factors with regard to each of the individual opinions, there's no requirement that he do so. And of course, as I noted previously, I haven't gone through each of the individual opinions to see if all of those factors were discussed with each one of them. But regardless of whether or not they were, the ALJ's acknowledgement of the regulation is sufficient. An acknowledgement that he considered the opinion in accordance with the regulation.
Yes, what do you think justifies the ALJ discounting all of the treating physicians' opinions? Foster and Jackson and the two nurses. What justifies that in this case?
So I would say that the ALJ gave reasons for each individual opinion that we could go through, and I'm happy to address any questions on each individual opinion. But overall, I would say that the ALJ had an expansive view of the record that each of those individual providers did not. The ALJ saw all of the emergency room records, saw all of the indications of inconsistent behavior on examination, saw all of the indications of drug-seeking behavior, and so had a whole view look at the record and was able to substantiate the decision with substantial evidence. And because the ALJ's determination was rational, it should be affirmed.
Let me just ask you a quick question. Did the ALJ expressly make a finding that Dr. Foster's opinion was contradicted by other physicians? If not, why didn't the ALJ err in discounting Dr. Foster's testimony?
So once again, turning to the ALJ's decision, I don't see that the ALJ specifically said that Dr. Foster's opinion was contradicted by other opinions. But in the Ninth Circuit, I don't believe there is any requirement that the ALJ expressly state whether or not the opinion was contradicted. And here we know it was contradicted because of the state physician opinions. Regardless of whether or not it was contradicted, however, the ALJ provided reasons that would satisfy either the clear or convincing standard or the lower specific and legitimate standard to reject Dr. Foster's opinion, including inconsistencies with the objective evidence, with the examinations, and with drug-seeking behavior.
All right. Do either of my colleagues have any additional questions of Ms. Moom? Okay, apparently they do not. So we'll go back to you, Mr. Yonich, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. I want to respond first to Judge Hawkins. In the record, there's numerous treatment notes that refer to his attempts at physical therapy in the past. These can be found at 463, 472, 627, 640, I think it's 695, 750. More recently, on 858 in the transcript, he was prescribed 6 weeks of physical therapy. And that was at 8:58. And at 8:65, it's reported that the physical therapy actually caused increased pain. There is evidence of his attempts to treat with physical therapy.
Thank you.
With regard to the findings that theoretically could have supported a finding of malingering, one of them is not even clear. That's the one with the POSS wobble signs, which looks like possible, but it might be positive. I think POSS sounds more like possible, but we can't really tell. That's not real clear evidence. But let's just assume for the sake of argument that he was at the beginning of this case inappropriately drug seeking, or he was, you know, we can't tell. We can't measure. I can't sit here and you can't sit there and determine what level of pain he was in. If you're in extreme pain, there was one point he noted he went to the hospital. They gave him Dilaudid, which is a very strong painkiller, which is not prescribed, I don't think. You have to go to the hospital to get it. And it worked really well for him. And he said, that's great. Can I get a prescription for this? And of course, they couldn't. When you're desperate and in a lot of pain, and especially at the beginning of this, it wasn't all that clear exactly what was causing it. It's only when the neurosurgeon saw that the MRI supported his pain complaints and supported the need for surgery that I think that's the flipping point that really confirmed why everyone, all the doctors here, were correct. The ALJ, what it boils down to here is that it's the medical evidence. It's the medical opinions.
Let's put it this way. Okay. There's a saying that, trial judges do what they do because they're there. We do what we do because we're not there. So obviously it's different. And any of us that have been in the trial court know it's different when you actually look at people and you make credibility determinations and you resolve that. There's no doubt in this record that there are conflicts and inconsistencies, and there's a lot of evidence to go through. So what is your best argument? And that's what trial judges do, or ALJs do, or whatever, is they, what is your best argument that the ALJ made a mistake that's not permissible, and that it wasn't just resolving inconsistencies, evaluating credibility, and doing all of that? What's your best argument?
Well, I think the best argument involves the medical evidence, because the medical evidence is compelling, it's uncontradicted. Everybody agreed. But with regard to
it isn't uncontradicted, though. That's not true. There are some different views. There are different things in there. There does require some resolution. So give me your best. Assume that there are some inconsistencies. What's your best argument that the ALJ erred?
Well, with regard to the testimony, the issue that you just brought up, which is the ALJ gets to sit in that room, she used to be able to, not now, but I can look at the person and listen to them testify. One of the things that you will find in this file, throughout the file, are references from doctors who are seeing him for the first time and note that he is peculiar, he's unusual. The psychologist who did the most thorough evaluation of that issue suspected that there may be some sort of Asperger issues or something. And so he comes across as a bit odd. And because of that, I think it's more important to rely on what the medical professionals, including a licensed psychologist, have to say about his behaviors than to rely on what an ALJ sees in a one-hour hearing. That, I think, is the more important aspect of how do you evaluate that. But
I've taken you over. So why don't you wrap up in 30 seconds?
Okay. I think, once again, I mean, I've already said it, but it's the issue here is we've even got a medical expert that was sent interrogatories by the judge and who came back and said he needs a listing and didn't have any question about it. And he said it was on an ongoing basis. So she held a second hearing, brings in another medical expert. Even he said that Coleman was sub-sedentary for at least a year. And after that, he didn't have an opinion. He couldn't tell. This is part of why I've only requested remand for a new hearing here rather than an award of benefits, because there are obviously some doubts that should be fully evaluated, and his chronic pain was never evaluated at all, and that has to be part of the picture. But I think the evidence here actually supports the finding that he's met the listing the entire time, or at least he's been sub-sedentary the entire time.
All right, thank you both for your argument. This matter will stand submitted. Thank you.